This is the Rick Edelman Show.
Let's go to the phones here on the Rick Edelman Show. Off to Boston, David is on the telephone. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
It's my pleasure. How can I help you?
Well, my question involves income taxes. Ideas in general to save on those taxes, and specifically, which option do you think would be better, either contributing more to our 401ks or contributing the same amount and opening up IRAs?
Well, generally, you can save more in a 401k than you can in an IRA. IRAs are limited to generally a third, or roughly thereabouts, of what you can put into a 401k. So you should contribute to a 401k to the maximum you're allowed. After you've done that, then you can save in an IRA on top of that. At the very least, you want to put enough into the 401k so that you're capturing 100% of the employer's match, assuming your employer offers one. And also assumes that you're satisfied with the investment choices that your 401k offers, and I would be willing to bet that the choices are pretty good.
We can't afford to put the maximum, I think it's 17% of your income in the 401k, but my wife's been complaining about taxes for years, and so I thought I'd ask her expert. So I don't know if we kept it the same.
From a tax perspective, it doesn't make any difference which account you fund. It's a question of how much you fund, not where you fund it. So whether the money goes into the 401k or the IRA, the tax implication is the same. And if your wife's been complaining to you for the past several years about taxes, tell her to put on her seatbelt because she ain't seen nothing yet. We are about to experience massive levels of tax increases in this country, so she better brace herself.
Okay, well, thank you.
That was David in Boston here on The Rick Edelman Show, a rather deflated David in Boston here on The Rick Edelman Show. Got a question for me, but don't want to call and talk to me on the radio show? No problem. Just record your question with your voice. Use your smartphone, record your question, and email it to me to askrick@rickedelman.com. That's what Gavin did. Here's his question.
Hey, Rick. My name is Gavin, and I live in the Phoenix area. My wife and I moved here not too long ago, and we're currently renting a house with a baby on the way. We're not quite ready to buy our first home for two reasons. We're not sure exactly where we want to end up, and we want to wait for the housing market to stabilize. We've been saving long-term with Roth IRAs and 401ks, but we've also been saving short-term for a house in a regular savings account. With talk of rising inflation and low savings account interest rates, I'd hate to be in one of the two positions of panic buying a home now or waiting things out, but having our savings decrease too much in value. Are there other good short-term saving strategies, or is a savings account still the best bet? Thank you.
No, there aren't any other options. I think you're thinking about it correctly, Gavin, and you should continue with your plans. And do not chase higher yield, because as you chase yield, you take higher risk. What matters is the protection of your principal, its availability to you as needed for a down payment on a home once you find one, and leave it at that. So I wish I had a better alternative for you. Low interest rates are the price we pay for safety and liquidity of the money. And that's all there is to it. You can do what Gavin did. Call me, 888-PLAN-RICK, or send your voicemail to me to askrick@rickedelman.com. Let's take a phone call here on The Rick Edelman Show. Off to Paulsbow, Washington. Neil, welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Thank you for taking my call, Rick. I have been listening to your show and read most of your books.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
So one of the subjects you talk about at length in your books and on the radio show concerns home mortgages and home loans.
Mm-hmm.
I recently assisted a widowed friend of mine with a home refinance and loan consolidation, saving her a couple of $100 a month. And I applied for one mortgage myself.
Cool.
I noticed when I talked with the three various brokers, one was a local bank, a mortgage company, and an online broker. When I was talking with each of them, it seemed when I was on the phone with them that they were looking online themselves to see what kind of money they had to offer.
Right.
So back in the day, since I'm 60-something now, I was under the impression that banks lent money to people.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem that that's no longer the case.
Right.
So it seems like the system is set up so that a loan is processed by a broker, whether it be a bank, a mortgage company, or an online service, and the money comes from somewhere else.
Right.
So two questions. Is that true, and can you expound on it? And the other would be, is there an advantage to using your local bank versus an online broker over the other?
So great questions. And yes, you're at the heart of how the financial services industry works these days. Long gone are the days of the Bailey Building and Loan. Remember Jimmy Stewart's movie, It's a Wonderful Life, where back in the day, you made a deposit into the bank, you put your savings there, and you opened a savings account, and the bank collected all that money from people's deposits, and they lent it out to home buyers and businesses, and they charged more on the loans that they gave out than they paid in interest that they gave to the depositors. And that's how banks made profits. They lent it out at 5%, and they credited you 2%, and they made the delta, the difference, as a profit. Those days are long gone. The way it works today is that banks provide loans to their customers, nothing different there, but after they settle the loan, after they complete the paperwork and provide you the loan, they then sell the loan to a servicing company. And that means that the bank is no longer on the hook for you making your payments as promised, because that's the risk to the bank, is that you might default. You might, you know, not make your monthly payment, and then they are at financial risk. The bank sells your loan to a servicing company. They're the ones who are now on the hook. So they buy the loan, reimbursing the bank, giving them the capital that they gave you, and the bank can go make another loan. So now banks make a profit from the transaction itself. The charges they hit you with for doing the loan is how the banks make a profit. The servicing company makes a profit from the interest that you're paying on the loan itself. And some of those servicing companies go by pretty big names, you know. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. They are two of the biggest. And what Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac do is they take all these loans and they package them together so that everybody who got a 30-year loan on June 8th at 3.5%, they take all of those loans, they package hundreds, thousands of them together, and they sell them as bonds to institutional investors. And the money comes full circle in this way. You'll then go buy a bond that is a mortgage-backed security, MBS, and you will earn interest on that bond. And the interest you're earning is representative of some homeowner who's making a payment to their bank, who's giving it to the servicing company, who sent it on to Fannie Mae. And there you have America's banking system today.
That sounds quite convoluted.
Well, it's so convoluted that when it goes bad, you end up with 2008, because it was these mortgage-backed securities that led to the crash of 08. So we are hopeful that that won't happen again, that the rules are in place to prevent those kinds of crazy practices. Remember, ninja loans, no income, no job or assets, ninja loans, because people were able to qualify for mortgages because the lenders didn't care if you defaulted. They sold the loan. So all they wanted to do was settle the loan. They got their money. They then sold the loan and they didn't care if you defaulted. And it got to the point that nobody anywhere in the entire system cared. And ultimately, the mortgages collapsed and housing prices crashed, and so did the stock market. And well, we all know painfully what happened in 2008. So that's the system. That's how the game works today. Now, your fundamental question, where should you therefore get your loan? Should you go to your bank or should you go through a broker? Well, here's the difference. If you go to your bank, you're going to get a loan offer that your bank offers, and that's it. It's kind of like going to a Ford dealer. The only thing you're going to get from the Ford dealer is what they're offering with Fords. If General Motors or Chrysler has a better offer, you wouldn't know because your Ford dealer is not going to offer it to you or not going to tell you about it. If you go to a broker searches the marketplace on your behalf. I mean, you could go to 10 banks, do all that legwork yourself, or you can just go to one broker and the broker will go to those 10 banks for you. And because the broker has relationships with all those banks, they'll probably, I would bet, be able to secure perhaps a better deal than you would get on your own, because you're only buying one loan today, and that's the only loan you're going to get for 30 years. That broker's doing lots of business with those institutions on a regular basis, can often get wholesale pricing, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm a big fan of going through a mortgage broker as opposed to going to an individual bank, unless you have a particularly good banking relationship, which most people don't have. I would recommend going through a mortgage broker to obtain your loan. So your choice, go to your bank, shop around with lots of banks, or just go to a mortgage broker.
Would there be a distinction between a broker, which is a brick-and-mortar place in town, versus the online?
You'll determine that through competitive shopping. And the advantage of the online brokerage firms is that they don't have the brick and mortar, which means they're not paying all that real estate. The reason they're online is that they have a lower overhead, lower cost of doing business, and that allows them to lower their fees and enabling you to get a better deal on either the expenses associated with the loan or the interest rate on the loan. So yes, quite possibly, you might be able to do better by dealing with an online mortgage broker. However, having said that, who exactly are you dealing with on the other end of that internet connection? If it's strictly an online exercise, what if something goes wrong? What's their level of customer service? Who is this organization? How financially stable are they? Will they deliver on the promise? How do you know they're not just a scam outfit or a lousy rated one? So you want to do your proper due diligence and be careful if you're dealing with an online outfit. There are several huge online mortgage brokers that are absolutely worth using, and others that you would want to stay away from. In other words, just like any other element of the internet, you know, there are some retailers that are perfectly fine to use online and others that are nothing but a scam operation. So sure, you should certainly consider that. And what you might want to do is go to an online mortgage broker, get a quote, take that to a brick and mortar local mortgage broker, and let them compete with each other.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for that.
Neil, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for calling. I'm really glad that you did. That was Neil here on the Rick Edelman Show. He called me at 888-PLAN-RICK. You can do the same for the next several months, still taking calls, still answering your questions for the remainder of the life of the Rick Edelman Show, which is winding down this fall. Excited to be with you here for the remaining time we have together as Gene and I move on to our next adventures. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. And of course, my colleagues at Edelman Financial Engines, they're not going anywhere. They're going to continue being happy to field your questions as well. So just feel free to give us a call if you've got any questions or concerns about your personal finances.
These callers are pre-recorded and pre-screened. Neither Edelman Financial Engines, a division of Financial Engines Advisors LLC, nor its affiliates offer tax or legal advice. Interested parties are strongly encouraged to seek advice from qualified tax and/or legal experts regarding the best options for your particular circumstances. Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 ranking is based on a number of both quantitative and qualitative criteria and is determined by collective analysis of the Talkers editorial board with input from a wide variety of industry leaders. Investor experience returns were not considered as part of this ranking. Rankings for 2009, 2010, and 2012. Barron's ranking has three major components: assets managed, revenue produced, and quality of the advisor's practice. Does not assure investment returns. Quality of practice components include advisor regulatory record. Rankings based on a universe of applications submitted through self-nomination to Barron's.